Police Academy is your source for the no apologies, no spin truth about all things police. Discussions about why cops do what they do, avoiding speeding tickets, or just how to stay alive can all be found right here. No questions out of bounds, no topic too sensitive. This is Police Academy. Do you understand
the words that are coming out of my mouth? What we're dealing with here, glittering air, is a complete lack of respect for the law.
And smoke in the reef.
Call the dust pop.
We live in a society of laws.
Dust pop?
Yeah.
No, it's not real.
This thing of weed.
Takes one shot a weekend of training to get that bag.
The Department of Justice has concluded that there is reasonable cause to believe that the Chicago Police Department engages in a pattern or practice of use of excessive force in violation of the Fourth Amendment to the Constitution.
With all of the issues that we've talked about so far in this series, that should come as no surprise. But what is the end game? What does it look like when you have a broken system like this in a city as big as Chicago? That's what we're going to talk about today. Enjoy the show. So I want to talk about practically what it looks like when you have this kind of a broken system. What is the result? And Laquan McDonald, the reason the DOJ got involved with Chicago PD is a good place to start. How on earth did an incident like this that was captured on video get swept under the rug? Well, part of that answer is the broken system we've already talked about, but the other part is what that system allows. And the first thing that it allows and encourages is what they call a code of silence. And I've been asked about this many times, you know, does this code of silence, the blue wall of silence or whatever people call it, does this exist? And my answer has always been, yes, I think it does. However, a union president from Chicago PD had this to say, quote, "There's a code of silence everywhere. Everybody has it. So why would the Chicago police be any different?" End quote. Well, that's not true at all. And I can see how someone would have that perspective when that's all you've known. But that is not true. In fact, I would say a majority of police officers don't agree with such an idea, that they would have to defend the wrongful and illegal actions of another officer. And if you do, and you're an officer, you need to check yourself. If you work for a department where that mentality is pervasive, your department has a problem. That is a corrupt culture. Now, another comment from a Chicago police sergeant takes it another step further, and I've heard this before as well. And he said, quote, "If someone comes forward as a whistleblower in the department, they're dead on the street," end quote. Another sign that you've got a very corrupt culture within your department. But of course, officers aren't allowed to lie, right? And that's no different with Chicago police. They have something called Rule 14, which basically says that officers can't lie. But lying officers routinely are not fired. During the course of 5 years, only 98 charges were brought against officers for lying. One-third of those resulted in a 25-day suspension or less. Now, in contrast, I don't know if I've told this story before, but with my department, an officer that I knew very well and was actually a good guy, and I still stand by that, lied about where he was on sick leave. And when they said, "Hey, we know you're lying, you need to tell the truth," and he didn't, they fired him. That is the way it should be. You might think that's a little excessive, you know, going to hang out at the beach instead of being at home sick isn't that big of a deal. But it is, because it sacrifices your integrity and indicates that you don't have the integrity to do this job. But the message Chicago PD sends to its officers is that you can lie and you can get away with it. Now, to explain why so few charges were brought against officers, the IPRA chief administrator said, quote, "We don't make Rule 14 allegations in a cavalier way because we realize how significant it is and how devastating it can be to a police officer's career, end quote. Yeah, that's kind of the point. If a police officer is lying, and you can prove it, they shouldn't have a career. I think the chief administrator is kind of looking at, you know, if an officer lies about something, then their testimony isn't any good in court, and then any case that they are part of is now in jeopardy of being thrown out. Yeah, absolutely. And I don't disagree with that. If you're caught lying as an officer, you shouldn't have a career. I'm sorry, not sorry. That's the way it should be. It's frustrating to see that a department like Chicago PD, something as powerful that affects so many people, would allow this kind of stuff. Flat out lying. And say, 25-day suspension. Move on with your career. No big deal. Just sweep it under the rug. Here's a few examples to kind of drive this point home and make it real. And I think this first one is one we've talked about already with a woman getting arrested for prostitution. She's handcuffed. Officers are hitting her and swearing at her. And in this example, the report says an officer punched the handcuffed woman in this massage parlor and shows the officer looking for the video recorder that he realized had captured this incident. Quote, "The IPRA failed to discipline the officer for the obvious cover-up attempt and settled the physical abuse claim in mediation for an 8-day suspension," end quote. I failed to mention this before, but the report talks at length about the fact that cover-ups are just an accepted part of the business within Chicago PD, including the IPRA, the police board, the Bureau of Internal Affairs. They just know that officers are going to try to cover up their wrongdoing, and it's not seen as something that should end their career, as this example painfully illustrates. It just speaks to how far off track this department has gotten, to where corruption and cover-ups are just part of the game. And what's really dangerous about that is, well, officers know that lying is tolerated, and it is human nature, unfortunately, to take that easy way out. If you know that you're not going to get fired, but you might get a little red mark on your record because you did something wrong. For example, there was one officer who accidentally discharged their pepper spray in a restaurant. Honest mistake, bumped this pepper spray and it sprayed, whatever, and they lied about it. But guess what? That's human nature. If you know you're going to get away with something and it's easier to just say, it didn't happen. This happened instead of facing the consequences, and you know that even if you get caught lying, it's not going to end your career. I'd argue that human nature lends most people, if they're in that culture long enough, to lie. And here's a couple examples of this Rule 14 not being enforced. Quote, "Witnesses' statements and a video showing the accused officer lied in a report about the basis for arresting the complainant, but no Rule 14 charges were made, and the officer received a 2-day suspension following, you guessed it, mediation," end quote. Now, this next one deals directly with Laquan McDonald. The report writes, quote, "Neither the IPRA investigators nor the IPRA chief administrator considered pursuing Rule 14 charges against any of the officers who witnessed the shooting and completed reports that seem inconsistent with the video footage, nor against the supervisors who approved such reports," end quote. So if you've seen this video of Laquan McDonald, you know, he's out in the middle of the street, and one of the officers involved shoots and kills him. Now, all of the other officers there provided statements which all seemed to line up with each other, but didn't seem on the face of them to line up with the video evidence. And nothing was done about it, even in such a high-profile case as Laquan McDonald. So what does that tell you? When that much public and political pressure is on to hold officers accountable, and the only officer to get in trouble, potentially, is the one who actually shot the young man. But everyone else who may, in fact, be lying about it, we don't know, gets off scot-free. That is scary. And again, that goes back to what I mentioned earlier in this series, that this has helped me understand the fear that people have of the police, that some people have toward police officers. Because when these kinds of things are actually happening and not being dealt with, that doesn't just send a message to the officers, it sends a very clear message to that community as well. If bad cops are allowed to continue abusing their powers and the people that they're supposed to protect and influence their peers and create that culture, how can you expect your community to trust the police department? And it doesn't end with lying. Officers are known to tamper with, for example, microphones and body cameras. After Laquan McDonald was shot, 80% of the mics on the entire department weren't working. And they looked into that because there was no audio with the Laquan videos. And I've heard stories of officers when they were being told, hey, you need to be wearing these mics and these cameras, throwing them on top of police district stations. I don't know if that's confirmed, but that's what I heard. Officers rarely used their car cameras or body cameras. We've seen that issue come up as well more recently with, for example, the Paul O'Neill shooting. The officer who shot him didn't have his body camera on. Now, I talk about that in that video. There are some reasonable explanations for it, but it doesn't bode well for a department that's known for having these cover-up issues and tampering tendencies. Officers also are known for filing false assault charges to cover up their wrongdoing and intimidating witnesses. And that is where that whole affidavit issue, when someone comes and complains against an officer but has to come in and identify themselves, becomes a problem. Because even when someone files a complaint and says, hey, I've been threatened, I don't want to identify myself, but this is what happened, without that sworn affidavit, nothing is done. Fair warning, this next example has a little bit of language. Quote, in one illustrative case in which a woman alleged that an officer had raped her, she refused to provide the Bureau of Internal Investigations the officer's name and refused to sign an affidavit, telling the investigator that the officer had told her that he had, quote, bigger power, end quote, over her and would, quote, fuck her up, end quote, if she went to the hospital or the police. The woman alleged that the officer had also threatened her girlfriend, a possible witness to the rape. Despite providing a detailed account of the alleged rape on two separate occasions to the investigator did not follow up on the results of the rape kit, did not attempt to interview a known witness, and did not canvass for witnesses at the location where the victim and the officer reportedly met. Nor does the investigator appear to have sought an affidavit override. The BIA investigator instead closed the investigation, quote, based on the victim's refusal to cooperate any further, end quote. Now, I understand what it's like when you're dealing with someone who doesn't want to fully cooperate with the investigation. But when you have someone saying, I have been raped by one of your officers and threatened by that officer, and I'm afraid, I don't want to identify myself. Yes, that makes the investigation more difficult, but it does not justify you saying, well, they're not cooperating, case closed. That is completely immoral and unacceptable. But this is what happens when you have a broken system like this. Now, one of the Department of Justice's goals in this whole thing is to provide what the department hasn't been providing its officers, and that is guidance. And I'm not saying that they're right and this is the perfect system to fix these problems, but the Department of Justice recommended this disciplinary conference process to replace the accountability system that Chicago police currently has. And at one point in the report, it seems they're pretty upset about the fact that Chicago PD has basically ignored that recommendation. They wrote, quote, "The disciplinary conference process we recommended is used in law enforcement agencies across the country to improve accountability systems. With the latest version of the draft disciplinary matrix discussed below, the city appears to have rejected our suggestions and decided to leave this broken process in place with only superficial changes," end quote. So that draft disciplinary matrix is what Chicago PD chose to go with instead of what the DOJ recommended. And they're just saying, this is not going to fix your problems. That's the scariest thing about all this. You have a department with these kinds of issues, and they're ignoring the recommendations on how to fix them and really only making superficial changes as they've done over and over and over again in the past. Clearly, nothing is going to change, nothing significant, at least not nearly to the extent it needs to. And it's a hard place to be. And again, who do you point the finger at when it comes to fixing these problems? It is going to be extremely expensive to right this ship. Not only do they need to throw a bunch of money at issues right up front, but the continued operating cost to actually correctly staff the department and the accountability systems that are in place is going to increase the operating cost of this department immensely. Now, I don't pretend to have some magical fix to this situation, this problem, but it is clear that it has to be fixed. Because the end game is, this is dangerous for police officers and civilians alike. And in Chicago's case specifically, this pattern or practice of unreasonable force and these deficiencies impact the Black and Latino neighborhoods the most. The same neighborhoods which are experiencing the most crime and need the police to protect them. Now, some people would hear that and go, well, it's because the officers are racist and they're targeting those people. Well, that could be true. But the reality is that when you have officers who aren't properly trained, supervised, or held accountable, they are going to be abusing their powers and making mistakes wherever they go. And the more officers you have in a particular community, the more that community is going to be affected by those issues. That is what the DOJ is saying here, but I'll take it one step further. This broken system allows for real racism to persist. I can say with certainty, because I understand human nature, that within those 12,000 officers, there are racist, outright racist cops. And when they are not being properly supervised, trained, and held accountable, they're allowed to continue something that is unacceptable. Now, whose fault is it? Again, who were we pointing the finger at? Well, many people say, well, it's the criminal's fault. You look at this giant spike in Chicago's crime rate recently, and you say, don't blame the department. They're not committing the crimes. So you can point at the criminals. And yeah, that is sort of true. Without criminals, there wouldn't be crime. But okay, let's be honest, that's never going to be a reality. There will always be crime. You can point the finger at a city who doesn't support the PD, justifiably point that finger. But you're going to run out of fingers. You can point it at the police department that is used to allowing this, what is an embarrassing status quo, that doesn't equip their officers to do their jobs right. You can point it at the officers who take advantage of the fact that their police department doesn't hold anyone accountable. You can point the finger at politicians, people of the past that affected the department. But in the end, who is going to fix it? Well, the Department of Justice entered in a consent decree with the Chicago Police Department that should provide some accountability and hopefully provide some support in getting the ship turned back around. But at risk of being seen as a pessimist, I'm really more of a realist, Chicago has a history of coming to these forks in the road where these issues come to the surface and making it look like we've addressed the issues, we've created this new department. The IPRA is one of them. So is the police board. These institutions that are the fix to this problem, and they don't end up fixing anything. Now, I'm not saying the situation is hopeless. I'm just kind of pointing out the fact that it's really bad now, and it's been here before, and we've tried to fix it, and it hasn't happened. History repeats itself. I wish I had some sort of ray of sunshine that I could throw on this party, but that's just the reality of it. It doesn't mean all hope is lost. And if you are a Chicago police officer or anyone somehow involved with that department, I guess the ray of hope is you. You truly are the only ones who can fix this broken system. That is the end game. That's a wrap for this episode and the entire series. I hope you guys enjoyed it. I would love to hear from you what you liked, what you didn't like, what I can do better next time. I am open to that kind of criticism. I want this to be better. I want this show to get better with everyone that I make. That is part of why I kind of stopped the official weekly schedule so that I could really focus on doing the best that I can do. It's been pretty weekly since then, but that's just because I've had time to get these shows out. But I'd love to hear from you what you thought about the series. And of course, if you have any questions, comments, concerns, gripes, bunched up britches, or complaints, you can always contact me on Twitter, Facebook, or through email, policeacademypodcast@gmail.com. I'm going to read one review today. This one is from Jonathan007. Love that. I'm an old Bond player as a young kid. Great job, great show. It's titled, and he says, "If you ever wanted to just have a conversation with a cop, look no further." And to be honest, that's exactly what I wanted this show to be when I first created it. I just wanted to give everyone access to a police officer, in this case, a former police officer who could be honest about these things. So I'm glad that Jonathan, I'm glad you think that about the show. I appreciate the kind words and thank you for the review. Now, if you haven't left a review, I would love to hear from you. Just go into iTunes, find Police Academy, click rating and reviews, and give me a few stars and let me know what you think. But you can also support the show in other ways by donating, by sharing, and by asking questions. You can do all of that through the website at policeacademypodcast@gmail.com. And that is all. I will see you guys next time. As always, do good, be strong, fear nothing. This is Police Academy.